Hi there. This is Nick Savvides. You're listening to the N. Savvides podcast. This is a show where we talk about doing big, adventurous, audacious things and doing those things well with others. It's a show about the art of collaboration and all of its many facets. Micah Haley is the editor-in-chief of Scene Magazine, a publication that covers the entertainment industry here in Louisiana, Atlanta, Texas, and throughout the world. But they do so much more than that, as you're going to hear in the show. Now, Micah is a true industry insider, and one of the reasons I wanted him on the show was to get his perspectives on how we can navigate the entertainment scene. The big industry parties can be overwhelming at times. What are the ways to approach them? How can we interact with folks that we want to meet, maybe a big star that shows up at one of these events? So Micah gives us tips on that. He also gives suggestions for how to get the attention of a publication like Scene Magazine. So if you're an up-and-coming band, if you're an artist, a performer, these are valuable things to know. Lastly, we talk about ways that we can support Scene Magazine and LFEA, Louisiana Film and Entertainment Association, as they fight to protect the industry here. Before working for Scene Magazine, Micah was one of the guys who lobbied for the tax rebates that make the industry possible. So he's going to tell us some of the challenges ahead for the industry and ways that we can get involved to make sure it sticks around. And you should stick around too, because we've got another excellent, engaging show for you. All right? So let's get this started.
This is the N. Savvides podcast.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the podcast, Micah Haley.
Hey, Nick, thanks for having me.
Tell us a little bit about the vision for Scene Magazine. You all do quite a lot, and it goes beyond just the magazine. You do some fashion events and New Year's Eve and all those things. So tell us how you understand the vision.
Well, Scene Magazine was started by my business partner, Andre Champagne, who owns another company called Hollywood Trucks. And this was about 5 years ago, and we were having lunch one day, and he was talking about another publication that he was advertising in. And he was like, you know, I know for a fact the people I want to advertise to do not read this magazine. So I was like, really? And he was like, yeah. He's like, and I'm spending, you know, X number of dollars a year. For that amount of money, I could just start my own magazine. And so I was working in the film industry at the time, and so were several of our investors. We decided to get together and create this publication called Scene Magazine that covers the entertainment industry in Louisiana. But now, 5 years later, we cover entertainment from Texas throughout the South, all the way to Georgia. So it's really grown quite a bit. And as you mentioned, we also have found other discoveries along the way. Like, I don't think we ever really intended to throw parties, for example, or big parties, but it ended up being this thing we kind of stumbled backwards into. And before I knew it, we were throwing these big events where 2,000 people are meeting on the lot of a movie studio. And they really have become very nice events that everybody enjoys going to. We've been lucky enough to have, you know, Spike Lee and some other major players in the film industry come to some of these events. We have a very strict dress code, so we try to really bring a fashion component that way. And then,
yeah, keep it classy, folks.
Yeah,
right?
We're trying, you know. And I think that alone has really gone a long way towards setting the events apart in Louisiana, where people like to be very relaxed. We want people to look their best at our events, and they do. And then we always try to have great musical acts as well. Our New Year's Eve party last year, we featured a great performance from Andrew Duhon, who was at the Grammys just a month or so later. So it's really been a pretty amazing 5-year journey. And every day, the only thing I think about is how we're really just at the beginning of it.
You are a big part of the puzzle, I think, in growing and expanding an industry here in Louisiana. It helps to have the studio and to have the technicians and the film crew and performers. But there's also something to be said about having a magazine that amplifies and connects people. You look at some of the other big markets like New York and California, and they clearly have established publications that support the industry. So I was wondering if you have any thoughts in that, and how Scene can and does support the industry here.
Yeah, I think, you know, I look at this publication as an extension of the work that I was doing in the film industry. I look at just the different connections we've been able to make. I mean, it's really been an interesting thing for me, just as the editor, to interview, say, a film composer 1 week, and then at the end of that week, I'll interview a producer and say, what are you working on right now? And be able to recommend them a composer I just finished speaking with. And, you know, it's just by the nature of interviewing people, as you know, from doing a podcast like this, when you talk to someone and ask them questions, you get closer to who they are and what they want to do and sometimes what they really want to do. You know, I've interviewed singer-songwriters that say, oh, I really want to compose for film. Or, you know, you interview someone who's, you know, working as an AD or as a producer, and you find out, man, I really want to produce this particular project. In some small way, I think we've been able to encourage relationships and act as a connector. And the events that we mentioned earlier have been great in that respect. I mean, it's so exciting after we have an event with that many people, with 1,000 or 2,000 people, to hear about two or three that connected or were introduced and worked together after that. Nobody in Louisiana, much less the rest of the country, realized how big things have gotten here. It's really amazing how people that live right next to where those movies are filming weren't aware that those movies were filmed here. So we're trying to spread that good news around Louisiana and around the South.
Yeah, and you all seem to be a step or two ahead of some of the trends. I think one of the big stories that you all broke before a lot of other publications was Beasts of the Southern Wild, specifically when you had Quovenzhané Wallace on the cover. It was striking to me because I wasn't aware of her, and I don't think a lot of people were, but you all correctly anticipated that would be something big. It would go on to get an Oscar nomination. So talk about that, about either that story or others that you feel you all were ahead of the game from the rest of the media out there.
Well, thanks. That's a great compliment. And it's certainly something that I strive for, trying to forecast a magazine that's a bi-monthly. I mean, we certainly have daily products on our website, for instance. We'll break news in a very timely fashion. But our flagship publication is Scene Magazine, which is printed 6 times a year. And it's, you know, it's pretty and it's high gloss. And we put all this love into making every issue because it's on the streets for 2 months. But, you know, many times I'm deciding the absolute final content, sometimes a month before it hits the streets. I'd like to say that I'm completely responsible for all of this, but a lot of it has just been some, you know, some alchemy of good luck and hard work or something. We were very fortunate to choose Anthony Mackie. I think we were Anthony Mackie's first magazine cover.
Oh, no kidding. That's exciting.
Yeah. And that one's going back, I think, to our first 12 months or first 24 months, but we put him on the cover of the magazine. And then, you know, during that 2 month issue cycle, you have the Hurt Locker not only nominated for Best Picture, but winning Best Picture. So that's a great one. And, you know, even with our most recent issue, which featured Chadwick Boseman on the cover, Chadwick Boseman obviously has been in 2 movies that are well-respected, playing James Brown in Get On Up and playing Jackie Robinson in the Jackie Robinson biopic that came out a couple of years ago. So he's someone who is completely unknown, and now he's been at the center of these 2 movies. But of course, I put him on the cover, and then luckily a month later, he's announced as the latest Marvel superhero, and he's going to anchor a movie called Black Panther in a couple of years. And in that same issue, you know, we also interviewed Meghan Trainor, who was a complete unknown, had only written some songs for people. And, you know, we heard her single All About That Bass.
Oh, so you heard it before it was everywhere on the radio?
Exactly. Like, I think her publicist reached out to me in May, and he was like, look, this is a new song we have, new artist. And, you know, we just listened to it around the office, and we were like, man, this is great. Like, we think this is a fun video, and just the song's really funny. And, you know, so we did an interview with her, and it's, of course, a risk because the song might not go anywhere. Of course, it's blown up, and she's been setting records at the top of the Billboard's Hot 100 for, I think she's been there for 10 weeks now, which is pretty impressive. So it's a little bit of luck, a little bit of hoping. I would say a lot of hoping. But, yeah, we've been really fortunate in that respect.
Well, this is a show that looks at collaboration. So let's say there is a publicist out there who wants to make you aware of a new band or new film. What's a good way for them to engage with you? Or what are things not to do?
I would say one thing not to do is don't create the illusion, at least with my magazine, don't try to create the illusion of scarcity. You know, this is something that is a way of life, I think, in publicity circles in New York and Los Angeles. And I'm sure that there are reasons for that. In fact, I know what most of the reasons are, but it's pretty easy for someone in my position who's come from the film industry to get to their clients without their help. I'm going through a publicist most of the time because that is the sort of proper channels. But there are many, many instances, I would say maybe even up to half of the big names we've gotten, I've reached out to their publicist and been turned down or been strung along, which is even worse. It's, you know, because I'm thinking something's going to happen and then it's denied at the last second.
Yeah, that's the very worst for anything.
It is, because you invest all this time and then it doesn't happen. But if I'm not able to get to someone through a publicist, most of the time I'm able to get to them through personal connections. And so it's never a position a publicist enjoys being in when their client calls them and say, hey, did you get a request from these guys? I'd really like to do an interview. Only then to find out that they'd turned down that interview earlier, you know? So that's one thing I would say to avoid.
So basically, don't play games with you guys.
Don't play games with us, I would say, in particular. Another bit of advice I would say on a more localized scale would be, if you are a publicist and you're reaching out, have the answers already before you talk to me. There's a few basic things. There's like a hit list of maybe four or five things that I'm probably going to ask you.
Like what? What are some of these things?
Well, one thing is, because we're a print publication, you know, if you want to have any shot of being featured in Scene Magazine, the print version, you have a better chance of being featured if you have press quality photos available, professional quality photos. So this is very, very common in the music industry where an artist is really good and I'll enjoy them. I may not have the money or the time to invest in doing a photo shoot for them, but if they had, you know, press quality photos that are, when I say press quality, I mean a photo that's 300 DPI at about 8 to 10 inches. If they have photos of that quality, that's something I will very seriously consider. Bands will have photos, or they'll even get professional photos taken. Like, I can look at their photos on Facebook and say, that was taken by a professional photographer that either did them a favor or they paid this person thousands of dollars to do it. But the press quality photos are nowhere to be found. You know, and the only photos that the publicist has to make available to me are web resolution photos that are at 72 DPI. And, you know, sometimes I can make that work, but
it's not ideal for printing.
It's not at all ideal for printing. So I can cite, you know, maybe a handful of instances where it wasn't ideal and I was able to make it work. But more so the case is that when a publicist is able to provide me with press quality photos right out of the gate, a link right away in the first email, they say, you know, check Dropbox for these photos. I mean, that's amazing. And then just some background information on the band, especially up and coming bands, just having a one sheet, a Word document with, you know, your band's name on it that details the members of the bands, their backgrounds, what else they've worked on, the style of music, where they're from, that basic biographical information. For a journalist, that stuff is often very difficult to find for artists that are not starting out, but are just beginning to build something new and trying to get press coverage for it. But it sounds like I'm talking about sort of smaller, localized bands. But I mean, I've seen these issues even with major labels. I've seen, you know, pretty well-known bands that don't make photos readily available and don't make biographical information readily available. And as a journalist, we live and die by deadlines. So, you know, every day I've got a deadline for Scene Today and something is going in it. You know, every 2 months I've got 100 pages to fill in Scene Magazine and something is going in there. And sometimes I don't even have time to reach out to the publicist I have relationships with to say, hey, is there anything that you're promoting? Or is there any hole I can film here? But, you know, if a publicist has reached out to me, even if I've never responded to them and I can look back at my email and find, oh, this opportunity came and I didn't think I was going to be able to promote this band or promote this event, say, if I have that in my inbox and there's a Dropbox link and, you know, everything that I need to create a piece as a journalist, I can put it together in 10 minutes. And then, you know, that's a band or that's a company or something that got some promotion through Scene that they otherwise would not have received. In order to understand what sort of materials I'm looking for, it's not a lot more than looking at what an article is. I mean, to write an article, you have to have accurate information, preferably with some quotes in it. I don't like to pull stock quotes from press releases or from that sort of, what's called a press kit. But in a pinch, when I'm against the deadline, I will do it, and so will every other editor that has a job today.
Right.
They will do it because that deadline is the cruelest mistress you've ever had.
And I've had many a cruel mistress.
As have I. Yes.
Okay, that's some good advice. Let's look at it from the other side now. You're in this unique position where you see a lot of people come and go in the entertainment industry. And I was wondering, what are some things that you would suggest doing for the typical person who's trying to get established but isn't yet?
I do have this sort of interesting bird's eye view, and I'm able to see into industries that I've never worked in, such as the music industry and the fashion industry. I've never worked in those. And, you know, I would say the advice is not really a lot different than the same advice I would give in publishing or really any industry. I think that if you have a good attitude and you have a good work ethic and you have a sense of just professionalism, that goes a long way. And it's not about one instance of those things. It's about carrying yourself with those three things always. Promote yourself, not just as someone who is capable, because that's not always the primary factor I find. I mean, I look back at my own career, which has been in a lot of, has been in a lot of interesting areas in the film industry and now in publishing. And I mean, I got hired for a lot of jobs that I just straight up was not qualified to do. But I think people that put me in those positions had seen me in other positions where I was kind of put at the plate without a bat, so to speak. And, you know, they saw me sort of make do and try to make the best of a situation that I wasn't really prepared for. And, you know, I look back a couple of years ago, I went and talked to some of those people. And the one thing I kept hearing was, they were like, you know, we just wanted to work with you. We liked your personality and we thought you were always going to bring a smile every day. And looking back, that never occurred to me at the time. I just thought I was showing up to do a job and was just kind of doing the things I think, you know, maybe my dad taught me to do when I was 5 and he needed me to hold a wrench. You know, that stuff really goes a long way. I don't know if that resonates with your experience at all.
Oh, yeah, it does. I mean, I think dealing with people in stressful situations, it helps if it's someone that's easygoing or that you enjoy being around, because it's the worst when it's a stressful situation and you look over and you think, I just want to punch this guy. Please just stop talking, you know? So I think that's a huge part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I came into the film industry and knew no one. Like, I literally quit my job and knew nobody in the film industry. I had no job lined up and just went out there on the internet to try to make it work. After my first or my second job, I realized I was getting jobs because I knew people. And it wasn't because they were my relatives. It was because I had been to war with them before. And they looked back and they were like, you know, I'm about to go to war again. I'm about to make a movie. You know, who do I want to go to war with?
Yeah, I want to be in the trenches with this guy.
Exactly. And people think, who do I want to be in the trenches with? And it's like, you know what? Yeah, I want somebody who can shoot straight, but I also want somebody who is going to crack a joke when we're so stressed out that we need some levity in order to keep our perspectives.
Let's talk a little bit now about industry parties specifically. I want to say the first time I met you was actually at the Rue House for Scene's Twilight Party. Do you remember that?
I do. Yeah, that was a small one we did.
Yeah. So you had this kind of great, wise entertainment sensei kind of thing. I think you were giving advice to a friend or me. I don't remember, but it was one of those things where you were basically critiquing someone's introduction and you just kind of smiled and nodded. And then you said, one thing, just say one thing, and as opposed to listing, well, you know, I'm carpenter, filmmaker, actor, stuntman, you know, so it was like, wow, that was a very astute observation. Do you have additional observations about how to navigate an industry party?
Yeah, I would say, you know, I think this is particular to the film industry, but just to complete the thought, when you're growing up, like no parent tells their kid, you're going to work in the film industry someday. Right. You know, it's not like being a lawyer or a doctor where tons of people go into those professions because there is a familial tradition there or, you know, because their parents just force them into it. Everybody has kind of had to work against the grain to work in the entertainment industry. And, you know, I think that that results in a lot of people who are just fun and smart and are living the lives that they've chosen to live. And I love those people. Like, I love that, those sorts of personalities, and they have this entrepreneurial spirit. And so one of the things that stands out to me, and, you know, I'm trying to think back in my own experience to whenever I decided, you know, to only say one thing when people ask me, but I think something that people in the, that work in the industry get a lot when they meet somebody is you have someone that will say, they'll come up to you as you described and say, you know, I'm a writer, director, actor, producer, first AD. They'll kind of list maybe a couple of jobs, production assistant. And that is like a tip off to anybody that works in the industry that the person telling you this is very green and probably can't do the jobs they just listed. Doesn't mean they don't have talent, but think about it like this. There are people who are working through the film industry, and at every step of the way, you're meeting people, and everybody is thinking about, I want to make my movie someday, or I want to make my two movies someday. And they think, who can I get to make my movie? Who's the first AD who would work on my movie with me and can make sure it gets delivered on time and on budget? Who's the producer that can find the money? Who's the composer that I have a great rapport with and is a great composer? Who is the director? Who's the writer that's going to write me a great script? I have a lot of divergent things on my resume, but before I got into the industry and while I was doing all those jobs and now at Scene Magazine, I do a lot of different things, but there's one thing that I am, and I am a writer. And from that identity as a writer, I'm able to accomplish the other tasks. Like when I think of, you know, possibly directing something or producing something from somebody else, I'm always thinking first kind of as a writer and how can I take that greatest gift that I've been given and use it to help other people with their projects? How can I do that? And, you know, I look back and I realize that by telling people that one thing early in my career, so many people were like, awesome, this guy's a writer, I'm taking him with me, or I'm keeping him in my pocket. If you go up and you say five things, you go up to somebody who's a director or a budding director or a budding writer and you say, hey, I'm a writer, director, producer. If they're any of those four or five things, they're going to be like, okay, well, I don't know if this guy is going to kind of fit in my, you know, my circle of budding artists.
Yeah. So know your core strength and build on that. I think that's a good suggestion. I will tell you that I struggle with industry parties. For whatever reason, I've been to a few that were just so discouraging to me that I seriously thought about giving up. Like, well, maybe I should do something else because they made me that miserable.
Yes.
And so I was wondering, have you ever had that experience or you always have a good time at those kinds of events?
I don't know that I've ever had any bad experiences, but I have been to many events that that just haven't been productive in terms of my career. You know, I think that the best way to approach an event is to go and just try to find people you like and try to make, just honestly make friends with them with no ulterior motives. Because you may be able to connect with someone there that you get along with who you will never work for and will never work with you. But, you know, if they like you, if they like something about you, then, you know, they might give you a call someday or you might hang out with them again. You know, I think that just trying to establish relationships with people is the most surefire way to build your professional network. You know, the people that I'm in business with, the people who've invested in this magazine and the people that I'm working with on a daily basis, they really are my friends. Now, they're not friends that I had before I worked in entertainment. Nobody that I work with now, I went to school with. You know, I didn't go to college with them. I didn't grow up with them. And the few times I've tried to bring people from, you know, my sort of pre-professional life into my professional life, you know, it hasn't really worked out you know, either through some fault of my own or some fault of their own. But, you know, everybody that I work with now, I truly am friends with, and I really enjoy spending time with them. And when you're at an industry event, if you try to find those types of people that you enjoy spending time with, and hopefully they enjoy spending time with you, if you focus on that and just trying to enjoy yourself, that's what those events are really about. And I think if you do that, then you'll grow your network, and then ultimately, big picture, that's going to help your career.
The thing that's helped me with those events is when I go and think, you know, I want to try to give people something. I want to give them a sense of appreciation or acknowledgement, engagement, as opposed to going and saying, I want to take something from these people. Because I have had people who more or less corner me, and then they spout off their resume lists and all the people they've worked with. And that kind of thing just really makes me miserable, especially when I'm thinking like, okay, this person is not trying in any way to have a conversation. It's just about this person. So, I mean, that's one area. And the other thing is that I find that on occasion, because of the nature of the industry, perhaps, some people feel the pressure to be a little larger than life, as opposed to trying to find who they are to be the best version of themselves. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And it is what it is. I mean, one of the nice things about a big event like that is it's not running into somebody over coffee. I mean, usually there's a room of people. And if it's not working out with one person, you can kind of migrate to somebody else. And
do you have a good transition way of doing that? Like, hey, I'm going to go get a drink.
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah, alcohol is the social lubricant. You know? Go have a drink. I will say, though, that just a couple of fun stories. It's not great to get crazy drunk at those parties, you know?
Yeah.
Even at scenes parties, you know, are you going to this event to meet people and connect with them? And as you say, honestly, go to give them a good time, like go to enjoy yourself. Don't go to meet people. If you go and people see you enjoying yourself, I mean, that's, I think on a fundamental level and an attractive thing, but I don't drink at scenes parties. We have very large parties and I don't drink at all, even though, you know, usually there's a time during the night where it is appropriate to drink. If scene's name is on the party, at no point am I going to be representing scene with a drink in my hand.
Getting trashed, hanging off the balcony.
Exactly. That is never going to be me at my own party. I will also tell you that I'm, you know, when I take professional meetings, I mean, I know it's New Orleans, but when I take a meeting with someone from Los Angeles or someone from New York, even when it's a dinner meeting, I don't drink. And, you know, I think part of it is, it's not that I'm against it or anything, but I think that a lot of times New Orleans just has a reputation as a place where people are going to imbibe at all times. And I think I play against that a little bit, but it also, again, just shows them that I'm there to connect with them. It's about shared experiences and sharing an experience with somebody new. But, you know, the second you are clearly focusing on drinking rather than focusing on meeting people and having a good time with other people, that's something that kind of sticks out. But yeah, if you're looking to ditch a group, just do it. I mean, you don't need a reason to do anything. You know, I mean, if you want to make an excuse or you want to say, hey, I'm grabbing a drink, it is what it is. But again, that's the great thing about being at a big event is there's tons of people there, you know, especially at scene parties. I mean, there's 1,000 or 2,000 people there. So if you're not enjoying who you're hanging around, go hang out with somebody else.
One of the things that you do a bit of, and you do it quite well, is interacting with celebrities. I mean, you're often the one who's doing the interviews with the big stars that you have on the cover. So what suggestions would you have for those of us who also want to interact with maybe not a celebrity, but even a high profile person at an event? What are some good suggestions for approaching them?
That's a great question, Nick. That is a great question. You know, I don't really think the advice changes that much. I mean, at the end of the day, they're just people. If you're at a film wrap party or something, typically the cast has an entourage around them. That may not be the best time to go speak with them. But I think if you're there having a good time, the relationships that you want to create are going to find you. I may meet an actor that I've never done an interview with that I will eventually do an interview with by virtue of the fact that I'm going to meet them at that party. And that's usually through a mutual acquaintance. That's usually not necessarily through another actor, but it may be through an assistant director or someone who has the confidence of that actor will introduce me to them. But I got to say, I don't really seek it out. I don't try to get introduced to those people. Again, actors are just people and musicians are just people. Some of them are awesome. I mean, some of them are people that, you know, you look forward to, you know, them being like the godfather of your children. And some of them are terrible. Some of them are self-centered and you don't want to be around them and they're egotistical. And I don't think that should be surprising. I mean, some people just are unpleasant people, whether they're famous or not. The great thing about just focusing on creating personal relationships with people that you also have a professional relationship with is that by having that intimate level of trust with them, you know who they are. And, you know, when I look at, you know, some of the actors that and some of the directors that I'm good personal friends with, everyone I meet through them is worth knowing. I think that's just a testament to the fact that they are good people, you know, regardless of the fact that they're sort of well-known. And that's really the only type of person I'm really interested in knowing. I mean, if you're, you know, I may interview somebody that has star power and helps my magazine in some way, but at the end of the day, like, I'm not going to call them again. I'm not going to text them. I'm not going to follow up with them just because they are famous in some way. I really only want to be friends with people that are good people and good friends.
Sure, sure. All right. So ideally, there's a personal connection that we would have to a high profile person and or maybe going through the publicist. But let's say it's someone that you've been wanting to get to know or chat with for a while and you just happen to run into them at an event. Would you try to go and introduce yourself? Would you talk about their work and reasons why you admire them? Or it would just depend on the situation?
I would almost never bring up their work. I would almost never bring up their work.
Interesting. Because they would become cautious, like, oh, this is a crazy fanboy kind of thing?
This isn't something I've learned from working at Scene. I think this was something I learned while working in the film industry, which is I never asked any actor that I was working with if I could have their autograph or take a picture with them. And my sort of organic reason for that is the second you do that, you're not their coworker anymore. You know, you're not their colleague, you're a fan. And so, you know, even people that I worked with that I really would have loved a photo or something with, like Jeff Bridges or Justin Timberlake, it was very hard to fight Jeff Bridges, the urge to get a photo or an autograph from Jeff Bridges when I saw bowling pins that were arriving for him to sign, you know? Because it's like, come on, it's Lebowski. Like, how do you not get something from this guy? But, you know, in Jeff's case, I was really fortunate because even though I missed that opportunity when we were working together, I got a package from him after we wrapped that was this great black and white photo of him from the 1980s, like a headshot. And it was signed and addressed to me. And it was just like, you know, thanks for doing the show with me. But that's just the kind of guy Jeff is.
Oh, that was nice. So yeah. You didn't ask, you just sent it. It's like, I knew you wanted one all these days and weeks, buddy, but you never asked. Here you go.
Yeah. And I've heard, I don't know how true this is, but I heard from someone that he does that frequently. Like he does that to a lot of people or perhaps all the people that he works with. But that's just something I learned from production is I would watch how the actor or the director or whoever talks about somebody once they, you know, once they do something like that, they put you in a different category where they just categorize you as a fan. And for whatever reason, that's a categorization I've avoided, even in the scenarios where I am a huge fan. You know, again, I just focus on whatever they like whatever, you know, whatever I pick up on or whatever they're paying attention to. I mean, even when people are working, they're always doing something they really like, whether it's listen to music or watch a movie. I mean, a lot of people who work in films, believe it or not, love film and love television. So
who would think, right?
I know. So, you know, just talking to them about that stuff or, you know, just jumping in on the conversation. I mean, it's really hard to walk up and talk to anybody in a vacuum. But, you know, if you walk up and you just hang out for a minute and keep your mouth shut, you kind of get what conversation you're crashing and then you can jump on the roller coaster, so to speak.
Let's shift gears here and talk about your Kickstarter campaign. I understand you're doing this to raise money for the new mansion you're trying to build. Is that right?
That is it. And people have been completely fooled. And I got to tell you that $50,000 down payment is within spitting distance.
All right. Well, very exciting. So, of course, that's not true. It's a little more noble than that. You are helping LFEA put together money for a survey that is designed to see the kind of impact that the film industry has. Is that right?
It's a little more than a survey. It is an independent economic impact study that's being conducted or that will be conducted by HRNA, which is a very well-respected research organization that does this type of study regularly. And it's the real deal. The industry in Louisiana is, you know, just to kind of clarify the position we're in right now, it's very strong. And the sort of press that is that the state is getting is tremendous. I mean, it's a powerful thing when people read that the top 25 most profitable movies released in theaters last year, more of those were shot in Louisiana than anywhere else in the world. I mean, that's a powerful statement. It's Louisiana. We're not talking about Los Angeles. So, you know, that's a really powerful thing. And as someone who has grown up in Louisiana, I can tell you that the news headlines when I was a kid were more about corruption, political corruption, and, you know, they were about other things that were not positive, or they were just about economic news that wasn't encouraging, you know. Just going to school in Louisiana, I grew up here, and my teachers would tell me, they would say, oh, you know, that Louisiana has this brain drain problem. And I would say, well, what do you mean? And they would say, well, you know, the smart kids, they grow up and go to college elsewhere and they don't stay in Louisiana. And I was like, well, I'm not a moron, so I guess I'm going to be leaving Louisiana soon. You know what I'm saying?
Right. With that pitch, it's like all of the smart kids are leaving, but you should stay.
You should stay.
Please. Oh,
it really wasn't a great pitch. And they convinced me slowly over a period of years that I did need to leave. And as I honed in on the film industry as the place that I really wanted to work in and work around, I realized that's in Los Angeles. You know, that's in Los Angeles. That's not in Louisiana. So I'm going to need to go there. And it was just a very fortunate thing for me that when I was ready to leave LSU and begin my career, that the industry came to me. I'm one of the people that this program has kept in Louisiana and kept my tax dollars here and allowed me and my business partners to create a company like Scene Magazine and hopefully other companies that we'll create soon. It has done and is doing amazing things for Louisiana. And it is a very popular program, but the reality, the political reality is that every 2 years, Louisiana's legislature has what's called a fiscal session, and it's where they look at the budget and they look at different things such as the film tax credits, and they also look at oil and gas tax credits and solar tax credits and all of these other things that are essentially government subsidies. We all receive some sort of consideration from the state, and you know, the state legislature is balancing all of these things every 2 years. So the message that we've received, and so when I say we, I really mean LFEA, the Louisiana Film and Entertainment Association, which represents the interests of the film industry in Louisiana and lobbies for them at the state legislature. What we've been told is that the legislature really likes the film industry, but they need numbers. They don't just want our word, and they don't want just anecdotal evidence, although that's very positive and very compelling. I mean, some of the stories we've come across are incredibly compelling. They want numbers. And so the best thing that we can give them to ensure that the film industry stays here and continues growing and really continues reshaping the economy of Louisiana is to provide them with a study such as the one that HRNA is going to do. And, you know, we just had an epiphany. At Scene Magazine, we were discussing this with members of LFEA at Second Line Stages in New Orleans, and we were discussing maybe doing a party to raise awareness. And then it was actually Beth, who works with me, it just hit her like a lightning bolt. She was like, we really need to do a Kickstarter. There's no more public way that we can ask people to prove that they support the film industry than by saying, here's an opportunity to give back, and here's an opportunity to say, you know what, we believe in film so much that we are going to give money to this Kickstarter so that we can finance this economic impact study. And so the name of the campaign is "Here's My $2," and you know it references that willingness to give back and say, look, my livelihood comes from the film industry. You know, here's my $2, or here's my $20. Or we've had people that have given over $1,000, and that's incredible that they're willing to support the industry that has in turn supported them. The process of putting together the Kickstarter video, which was so much fun, just putting the tools that we've learned while working in the film industry to use in making this video. In the process of doing that, we filmed over, I want to say it's about 350 testimonials of
people. Oh, wow. That's quite a number.
It's huge. And we've only really been able to release 20 to 30 of them so far. And we're trying to edit and release one every day or two. And we've also got tons of written testimonials. As we record this, we have 470 backers. And we are at $48,824 of our $50,000 goal. And that is just unbelievable. I mean, we knew that this was going to be daunting when we talked to Kickstarter and said, this is what we want to do. They said...
They tried to talk you down like, maybe try... Wait, you got $50,000. Maybe there's an extra zero. How about $5,000? How about that?
And that's... they were a little kinder than that. But... I was actually on a Skype video discussion with one of the kind people at Kickstarter, and I could see the skepticism on her face as we were talking about it. So it feels just amazing to see the response from people. Just from talking with Kickstarter, I think we may be the first people to back this sort of study through a Kickstarter. I think we'll have a decent amount of press attention with people just saying, how did this happen?
Yeah. I mean, it would be great if it were positive and then more people, more areas decided to do similar things.
Exactly. So, it's going to be kind of interesting to see what happens after we find this last, few hundred dollars to definitely make it a success. You know, our biggest prize was a $10,000 short film. And, that's big. I mean, when we put that up.
That you all are making with the person?
That is correct. We are producing a short film, and we're going to bring all of the resources to LFEA to bear. We have been in touch with her for the last 4 or 5 weeks, and I'm not sure if she wants me to reveal her name just yet, but her story is incredible. She works in the film industry, and in addition to that, she has purchased a home here. She's not from Louisiana. She moved here to work in the film industry, and now she, after earning a living and staying here, putting that money back into the economy, she was willing to pledge $10,000 to this campaign so that she can take the next step in her career, which is to make a short film out of a script that she's written. Let me tell you something, man. The one thing I'm the most excited about is doing a short film.
That sounds like a great benefit. If I had an extra 10 grand, I would throw that your way.
I love it. And I'm excited about it, man. I mean, like I said, just going through this whole thing, I've personally have over 250 hours into it. It'll probably be 300 by the, by the time.
On the campaign or the short?
Just on the Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Before we even start the short. So it's weird for me to have spent so much time on it and not to walk away with anything other than it feels like if you're doing a Kickstarter that's this much work, there's a movie that gets made at the end, right?
You should get to drive a Mercedes or something.
Exactly. Right? So this is the movie we get to make. I'm hoping the short's going to be finished by the time we go to the legislature and we can, screen it. I mean, that would be amazing if we finish in time for that.
Is that just for one person? Like if someone else steps up to the table and says, I've got 10 grand, or is it, was just like one for this campaign kind of thing?
We have three prizes. So if we had two other people that stepped up, we would certainly accept their contributions and produce more films.
So people still have the chance to get a short film produced by Scene Magazine and some of the other industry contacts.
Yeah, and it's really the thing that is the greatest about it is this is not an LFEA short film and it's not a Scene Magazine short film. I mean, we're going to create an LLC and the backer owns it. It's the film. They do what they want with it. If they can sell it and get some sort of distribution, that's what they get.
Yeah, that's great.
It's really about them backing a great cause. And then in return, you have people that are going to turn around and be 100% invested in supporting their project. It's not the other way around. They're not directing our project or they're not writing a project that we make. It's the opposite. We're helping
you're
them.
You're making their project.
Exactly, exactly.
And so, to be clear, I would imagine the $10,000 means they have access to you all, but they also need additional money for budgeting of the short. I imagine that's not all inclusive, right?
You know, it just depends. I mean, first of all, that's a reality we shared with the one backers. We said, you know, this is what we're able to provide for you, and you can make a short with this. One of the things we'll be able to provide is, you know, donated equipment rentals and and obviously labor. And, you know, there are all these things we're going to be able to get donated. And that's where the real value is. I mean, trust me, it's going to far exceed $10,000.
So conceivably, it could be all expenses paid if they don't want to do any lavish. It's like, well, I feel like we really need to fly to Paris to shoot this one little tabletop scene.
Exactly. And that's one of the things we discussed with the one backer who's already chosen it is, given the resources that we're going to have, I can produce your script. I can produce your short film. You don't have houses that explode, you know? Mm-hmm. You don't have, Brad Pitt is not
robots
starring in it.
Robots fighting robots in space.
I know, sadly no, but if you have a script that, you know, is a suitable short film script, we can certainly make that. But, you know, there may be times along the way where we say, you know, look, backer slash director, we have this location that works per the script and you like this location a little more, but it costs $400 a day. Do you want to pay that $400? But yeah, man, I'm excited about it. I'm excited about going through this process and then making a short film and then showing it to people.
That really is a great offer. I mean, there are some short films that cost more than 10 grand.
Yeah.
If only I didn't work in the entertainment industry, I could pony up the money right now. But, you know, so it goes. so it goes.
In terms of everything that the legislature wants to hear and that state government wants to hear, they want to hear about indigenous filmmakers. They want to hear about people who are living in Louisiana and who are making their own content and are choosing to make their movies here. And, you know, you mentioned Beasts of the Southern Wild earlier, and that's one of the most powerful examples of that. I mean, those are people that live here and they cast locals, they cast Dwight Henry, and they cast Kavanjane Wallace, who's from Houma. And, you know, Kavanjane has a new movie called Annie that's coming out.
Yeah, Annie, it's huge. So that should be exciting for her. It's nice that she's still staying busy with work.
Absolutely. And Mr. Dwight Henry has had a couple of roles since that movie as well. And, you know, that's a movie that I think is really about Hurricane Katrina, which is the unfilmable subject. Nobody wants to watch a Hurricane Katrina movie, and I am first on that list. But that's really what Beasts of the Southern Wild is. But on top of all that is a huge artistic accomplishment and an even bigger economic accomplishment.
And I would say it is a hurricane movie, but it's also a life-affirming movie. So it's intriguing that it's got that duality to it, that it's about devastation, but it was also one of the most life-affirming films that I saw. So
absolutely. And I think that that's been the experience for the people that still live here after Katrina. I mean, it's the rejuvenation of the city of New Orleans and of Baton Rouge, who also really went through Hurricane Katrina in a very different way, has been remarkable. And, you know, it's something that has gone hand in hand with the film industry. I mean, if you're the state of Louisiana, you're the federal government, the number one thing you don't want to do is incentivize an industry that you already have. Okay. So, say the state of Louisiana is known for making hats. We're the biggest hat creators and distributors in the entire world. And the industry goes to the legislature and they say, look, we will make even more hats here if you give us, you know, 10% back on whatever. Well, you know, the thing is it's really, really hard to say what even more hats means. It's really hard to know how many more hats. I mean, because so many other factors come into play. But the great thing about film in Louisiana is that it was not here at all before the Louisiana Motion Picture Investor Tax Credit. Full stop. Was not here. There was no industry here. You know, every couple of years, there may have been a film that was set in Louisiana, but there was no industry to speak of. And there was also really a minuscule commercial industry. It was not very big, and they weren't making national commercials. And so everything that comes from the film industry, everything that, you know, you will go through and say, okay, this dollar's in the Louisiana economy because of film and or because of the commercial industry. Every one of those dollars is because of the program. And, you know, this isn't a small program. I mean, this program is over $1 billion. Just for comparison's sake, the Louisiana seafood industry is about a $1.5 to $1.7 billion industry, and film is over $1 billion. I mean, it's almost as big as the seafood industry. I mean, that's just an incredible point of comparison. And again, all of that is new. None of that was here. So, you know, that's the industry that we're trying to support, and it touches a lot of lives. It touches the lives of people who grew up here like me, and it also touches the lives of people like you, who I believe is not from here, and people, you know, like the lady who purchased the short film, who literally had no reason to move to New Orleans other than the film industry. So it's really a popular thing, and we're almost to our goal, and we're talking about stretch goals before the Kickstarter is finished and hopefully funded on November 28th at 6:01 p.m.
People still have a few days to contribute. We'll get the word out for that. I understand that this $50,000 is just a portion of the cost, that it's actually a little bit more expensive than that, right?
It is. It's actually somewhere, I'm saying this off the top of my head, but it's somewhere in the neighborhood of $100,000 to $150,000. So the rest of that money is going to be paid for by LFEA, and be paid for by, I think the MPAA is going to provide some of it as well. And by the way, one of the things I should mention is that we don't know what the results of this study are going to be. We're pointing them in a direction that I think we're saying, look at these areas, because I don't think these are being calculated. I know that, you know, all of the areas of economic impact are not currently calculated, because I'm working in one. I mean, Scene Magazine is a magazine that it's a company rather that would not exist if it wasn't for the film tax credits here. I mean, the environment wouldn't have been here. The people who invested in this company would not be doing business in Louisiana. You know, for most of them, they started a film company, they started one, and then this is their second company that they've created here. But the reality is that Scene does not receive tax credits, and also do not receive money directly from companies that do receive tax credits. So we're out there in this sort of fringe of the industry. And, you know, when Greg Albrecht, who puts together and says, look at the economic impact, he doesn't see us because we're nowhere near the tax credit program. But, you know, undeniably, we would not be here without it. So those are some of the areas that study is going to look at. And, you know, we're anticipating that it's going to be positive, because we're living every day in the middle of the positive economic impact that the program is creating. And this is really only the first phase of the campaign. The Kickstarter is the first of three phases of the Here's My $2 campaign. And, you know, this phase is coming to a close. We have something really cool planned for phase two. And then phase three is us meeting at the legislature and saying, look at all the things that have transpired in the last 9 to 10 months.
What about the critics? What about those who say, hey, why should we contribute some of our tax dollars to go to pay some of these big celebrities, these movie stars, or even Duck Dynasty, now that they've been established, they're not hurting for money? What would you say is a response to that?
You know, that is definitely one concern. I think a lot of people will say, why is the Louisiana taxpayer subsidizing the paycheck of a famous actor? I mean, they're getting this big multi-million-dollar paycheck, and what's happening? Well, first of all, I would say that if they are doing the work in Louisiana, which is the only work that qualifies under the tax credit, is the work that they're doing here. They don't receive money for doing work elsewhere. First of all, that money is taxed. If they're doing work here, then the state of Louisiana taxes them for doing that work. So we certainly receive a return. But, you know, the bigger picture is that you can't pick apart an industry like that. That's one aspect of the industry, but you can't go into the car industry and say, you know, we're going to incentivize the car industry coming to Louisiana, but we're not going to give any money to tires, or we're going to pretend that tires are not a part of this equation. The reality is you need tires to make a car, and you need tires to make, you know, to build cars in Louisiana. So that's something that is just an essential part of the industry here. In order to make movies here, those actors need to be able to come here. And I think that this is one area that may be addressed. I'm not an expert on this by any means, but there are some discussions that some changes may be made in terms of how they, you know, actors are compensated when they work in Louisiana. But you just need to look at the bigger picture. I mean, you can go in and pick apart smaller aspects of the industry. But when you step back and you look at the investment that the state of Louisiana has in the film industry at the biggest scale and look at what it's receiving back, it's a brand new industry. It's this brand new component of an economy that only 10 years ago was only known as oil and gas, tourism, and agriculture. People were still holding on to Louisiana's identity as an agriculture state. And not that agriculture isn't important, it is very important, but in terms of attracting young talent to the state who are going to be entrepreneurs, people that are going to start their first business and build a successful business by the time they're 35, then look to build their second business, then look to invest in their third business. All of those areas of the economy that were not represented here before the film industry came, you know, the tech industry, which is closely related to post-production, all of those things literally did not exist here at all. So I think that to people who want to pick one area of the industry and say, this is the problem, I think they're kind of missing the bigger picture, which is that the state has gotten something huge for allowing producers to receive some return on their investment in actors that they're bringing here.
So last question for you. Let's say your ideal collaborator is listening to this show. Whoever it is, what would you want him or her to know about getting the best out of you and out of Scene Magazine?
That's a good one. That's a good one, Nick.
Well, what can I do? I try.
If you bring a sense of humor to the table, I'm there. If I know that we're working on the same project and we have the same goals and you're there to take that journey with me and do it with a smile, you're going to get the best out of me. I'm going to respond to that.
Well, thanks so much, Mike. I appreciate it. It was fun hearing your stories and your perspectives, and hopefully it'll make for our listeners to have better experiences at Scene events or just in general. They will be better people after hearing this. All right?
I hope so.
That's what we do. We make one better person at a time or something.
Well, thanks, Nick. I'm a fan of the podcast. I listen to it, and I hope all of your listeners enjoyed this. And yeah, thanks for having me on.
All right. So that's our interview with Micah Haley. A few points I wanted to touch upon from the discussion. First of all, it's worth mentioning once again the amount of time that Micah is spending on the Kickstarter campaign. He said he's spending over 250 hours on it, and it's not even something that's going to immediately benefit him. He's putting in all that time for the benefit of the film industry here in Louisiana. And in an industry where people can be so selfish, they can be so focused entirely on advancing their own careers above all else, I think it's commendable that he is taking the time to support his community. We should do as much with our own efforts, whatever those are. Here's the thing, folks. Building a film community or any kind of distinguished community doesn't happen overnight. It takes time. It takes several people wanting it to happen, taking steps to ensure that it happens. Building a distinguished community of any kind is really, really hard to do. Think about how tough it is to build a career in the entertainment industry. It usually takes persistence. There are lots of setbacks. It's the same sort of thing with a community, but on a macro scale. A lot of pieces need to be in place over time for an industry to be self-sustaining. We've seen quite a bit of growth, as Micah was talking about, here in Louisiana. But if we're not careful, if we don't work to protect what we have, it could all slip away. So something to consider. One of the books that has influenced my thinking on a career in the entertainment industry is the book Black Swan by Nicholas Taleb. It's not in any way tied to the film of the same name, nor is it a book primarily about the film industry, but it's looking at how seeming unexpected things come and disrupt the landscape. And in the book, Mr. Taleb talks about careers that are asymmetrical in growth. You spend several years with seeming little progress, and then at a certain point in certain careers, and I would say entertainment is one of them, the successful people reach critical mass. That's when people get recognized for bringing something distinct that only they can bring, for being a Walt Disney, a Pablo Picasso, a J.K. Rowling, and so on. And that's really where the big payoffs are. Now, the thing is, it's hard to get there because there's lots of time when you're not seeing any benefit for years of effort. It's something that can apply both to our careers as individuals and to the progress we'd like to see in a community. I'll tell you, I get a little frustrated when I hear people talking about how Louisiana is Hollywood South. Why would the area want to become a cheap imitation of something already established? Why shouldn't we work to make it have its own personality, to be a Louisiana filmmaking hub? And we can participate in stories that relate to the area, that relate to who we are, without trying to be a photocopied imitation. I think we can do it, but we've got to stick with it, and it's got to be a group effort here. The way I see it, I benefit if a company like Scene Magazine is around and they continue to thrive. The same is true for filmmakers in the area. If you are a filmmaker here and you succeed, or if I succeed and we are able to stick around and continue to work on projects that bring in revenue, then it's easier to hire more people in the area, and then the community grows, the infrastructure expands. So there's something to be said about thinking about others. It is a competitive field to a degree, but we also benefit if we're thinking in a way that also encourages everyone involved to benefit, to be the best versions of themselves. Part of that is being able to acknowledge our struggles and look for ways that we can get better in those struggles. As I said earlier, dealing with industry parties is a big challenge for me. I wasn't kidding around at all when I said that I've been to some parties where I was so discouraged by them that I thought very seriously about quitting my pursuits here in the entertainment industry. It's hard for me to articulate why those events can be so difficult. Part of it is that there's so much noise, so many sensations, so many distractions coming at me, that it's sometimes a challenge to be grounded in who I am and to find my voice. And maybe it's my own insecurities coming in. Maybe it's also dealing with some overbearing personality types. But whatever the reason, it's so discouraging to me to be in a big room and to feel like I want to connect with others, but to be unable to do so. That's a very frustrating thing. Judging from what I've observed at parties, I don't think I'm the only one who struggles at trying to find the right balance for those events. You look at the people who go to these events and they overdose, overindulge in drugs and alcohol, and all the problems that can cause. So I think it is an important thing worth addressing. And it's also an important part of trying to survive in this industry. Look, even this podcast happened because I went to an industry party a few years ago, specifically Scene's party for Twilight. It was their way of celebrating one of those films being shot here in Louisiana. I was uncertain about going. In fact, if I asked a certain girl if she wanted to go with me to it, and I was met with resounding silence. Even so, I decided to go. It was a little uncomfortable, but I did meet Micah, and he was interesting to me. I got to know him a little better over time at various other events, and eventually this podcast idea came to me. At the time when I first met him, I had no idea of the podcast. It wasn't even something I was thinking about, but that's how it can happen if you get to know people and find out what they're about. If there's a connection there, then at some point, perhaps you all will work on something together. Maybe not. Maybe it's just a chance to find out who's there, but it won't happen if we don't take the chance to go and meet people and put ourselves in situations that are possibly a little bit outside of our comfort zone. I wish I could say that I've gotten past my insecurities at industry events, but there's still struggles to me. In fact, just recently I attended Court 13's Always for Pleasure events. Now, if you don't know Court 13, they're the filmmaking group behind Beasts of the Southern Wild that we mentioned earlier, and they put on quite an event. It's one of those really out there events that's hard to describe. I would say it's the kind of party that the great Gatsby might throw if he were a Southern gentleman and also a posh indie rocker. So that should give you some sense. It was quite the spectacle. Lots going on, lots to see and do. And they did a great job of putting on this really engaging event, but it was overwhelming to me. Maybe because I didn't know a lot of people there, maybe just because there was so much going on, but I found myself locking up and unsure of what to say. For the past month or so, I've been trying to stay away from alcohol. I'm trying to do that, I think, until the new year. Maybe longer, we'll see, but it's just a time for me to just reflect on things. And so I had done a fairly good job of staying away. I hadn't had anything to drink for a month. And then at the Court 13 event, I did give in. It was free alcohol, so that helps. I mean, when you don't have to pay for it and people are just giving it to you, it's like, well, okay, I suppose I can make an exception here. I might have turned to that as a way to try to feel better instead of acknowledging how I felt. And maybe that was a factor in making me less engaging at that party. I didn't do anything super stupid. I was fairly reserved. But, you know, there was something striking that happened. I was trying to talk to someone along the lines of what we said earlier, someone that I had seen, and I wanted to say hello and be engaging, like we were talking earlier with Micah about doing. And it didn't go so well. I was thinking of what I was going to say, and actually this kid came up to me and he was asking if he could get drugs from me. So that was surprising because that's not usually the sort of thing that happens. I don't know. I think something about my discomfort, about the energy I was putting off, made him think that I would be the guy to approach. I didn't know this kid. I didn't have any conversation. He just said hello and asked about drugs. And so I lost that window of opportunity. I was getting ready to go say hello. And then he came up to me and the opportunity passed. The person with whom I wanted to chat had already left. And so it made me think, what was it about my state of mind, the kind of energy I was putting off, that made that kid come and approach me? I noticed that he didn't approach everybody at the party asking for drugs. So something about me made him think, hey, you know, maybe this kid has what I need. Just as an aside, if you see me at a party, probably not the guy you want to approach for drugs. I just don't want to disappoint you. So, you know, advance notice, now you know, and so on and so on. Although I suppose it's conceivable that if the next few months go really badly, then who knows? If I look more disheveled than you've seen me, even then, you know, let's hope that's not the case. So in any case, don't come up and ask. All right. Okay. All right. So one last thought about the discussion. It was an astute point that Micah made about approaching the celebrities with whom he works, how he makes a point not to show himself a fan. And I think that's a good approach. There's something to be said about being able to treat even the people we respect as just other people. They might be decent and considerate and admirable, or they might be deplorable human beings. It's hard to say. And so when you approach someone on the perspective of a fan, it's almost like you're coming to worship someone, and that can really be a bad thing for you and even the person for whom you are a fan. I think the fandom culture does allow for some of these celebrities to do the horrible things that they do. It's sort of like the fans are enablers. Think about it. You're working on a film shoot and you've already expressed to the star in question that you're a big fan, that you admire everything about him or her. And then you're in the position where you have to chastise that person. Maybe he's just not doing what needs to be done or getting to the right location, or maybe even acting like a brat and someone needs to say something. Well, it's going to be a little harder to do if you've already prostrated yourself before that person. Not to say we shouldn't admire people, but maybe it's a good idea to do that after we get a sense of who they are. Are they worthy of our admiration when seen up close after we've gotten a sense of who they are? There's a difference at being good at something, at having a special skill, and being a decent, admirable human being. The two are not interchangeable, although sometimes we assume they are. And I do think if we are grounded in ourselves, if we're not looking to turn our focus to others and just say, let me consider this person before me moment by moment and evaluate who they are, that makes it easier for us to interact and maybe have those better interactions. So again, something to consider. All right, so a lot of ground we covered. I hope that's been helpful. What sort of challenges do you have in the area? Are you great at industry parties, or do you struggle like I do at times? Do you have stories that you want to share or ways that you approach them? It would be really interesting to have that discussion. Why not leave a comment about it on our show page, podcast.ncevides.com/scene, or just shoot me an email. That's podcast@ncevides.com. All right. Well, speaking of leaving a comment, last episode, I promised to give a nickname, an Edgar Allan Poe nickname, to those of you who commented. I don't know what I was thinking. There are not a lot of positive characters that I can reference in Edgar Allan Poe's work, and it's not exactly flattering to call or compare the benevolent people who comment and support the show to compare them to maniacal killers and crazy people. So I don't know what I was thinking, but I've got a few possibilities here. All right. Our first comment came from Sam. He supported us on the page and also on LinkedIn, the first guy to comment on LinkedIn. Thanks for that. Since you were the first commenter, let's name you for a first of Edgar Allan Poe's, The Murders of the Rue Morgue. This is widely considered to be one of the first modern detective stories. So, Sam, the Ncevides podcast would like to bestow you with the name The Unflappable Rue Morgue Unscrambler. All right, Jill. We've had a few ethereal conversations about the impact and meaning of art, and so you get named after a poem of Mr. Poe's in which the ethereal forces are envious. In this case, you will be the Annabelle Lee of the arts. And lastly, we have Ivochka, who left a comment on our iTunes page. It's quite the name. I don't know who you are, but I'm intrigued. It is such a mysterious name that you have. Thank you for that. And so I reference Mr. Poe's short story, Mask of the Red Death. I don't see you being Red Death. I hope not. But I see you making a scene at the party, the masquerade, if you will. So I dub thee Masked Venetian of Mystery. All right. So those are the nicknames. I might do nicknames for you for next time. I haven't decided what that will be, but it doesn't hurt to comment and find out what will happen. All right. I'm going to also include a link to the interview I had with Celtic Studios Executive Director Patrick Mulhern. We also talked about rebates there. So if you're curious and you want to learn more about that topic, it's an important one. You can check that one out. If you're not already doing so, why not subscribe to the show on iTunes? You can get all the episodes automatically. You don't even have to check the site. It usually comes out on the 23rd, but every now and then there's a little hiccup. You can also sign up for the newsletter. It's additional thoughts from me, and I do spend some time fleshing those out. I do hope you have a nice holiday season with family and friends. Special thanks to Rob Koslow for providing the music for our show, True Gemini is the song. All right, until next time, let's make our future collaborations be better collaborations.